It's Sunday, August 26th, 2007. I'm Kathleen Campion, and this is Bloomberg News Sunday. In a bright white industrial loft just below Canal Street, 12 people are scattered across a shiny wooden floor. Each has a headset on and a small computer strapped to the upper right arm. Each computer has a card in it, programmed with a specific series of directions. The medical secretary on the floor might hear,
"When I say go, run to X, then tiptoe to orange."
The book editor in jeans might hear,
"Skip like a kid to the person with their hand out."
And still others,
"Wave and grin. Get angry at the floor. Walk backwards in the shape of a triangle."
This is terping. People move independently toward colored markers on the floor or away from the person waving, or perhaps they collect around the X in the center. Each operates independently, marches to his own drummer, so to speak. And yet the whole, all of the movement taken together, as Terp's creator Patrice Renier says, the whole is a little piece of art.
When you're terping, you'll find yourself a part of a group, or you'll find yourself doing something with somebody else, or you'll find yourself doing something by yourself. Well, basically, you never know what's going to happen.
You don't know what's going to happen next, either once you complete something, you get another command.
Correct. You have no idea what's going to happen next.
And the overall thing, if you're not in the terp, but you're in the bleachers, you see quite a different thing.
The press has said that it looks like people are dancing, which I find also. I mean, I am a choreographer, and this is kind of the point. But it is
true. What do you mean it's kind of the point?
Well, what I'm interested in is directing and composing human movement. That's what I do, what I've done all my life. So when I see people doing things that they have no idea what they're doing, but or what they're going to be doing, but in effect, they're doing something which is an organized piece.
You've been refining this process for a number of years. In the beginning, why did this seem like a practical idea?
I was doing a type of choreography which was very complicated. It was stochastic choreography, meaning I was trying to use chaos to have a group of dancers go from one phase of movement to the other. Long story short, I was giving them pieces of paper that had symbols on them so that they could read from that piece of paper the sequence of their movements. This they hated, because dancers don't learn like that. They learn representationally, or they learn from following music cues, that sort of thing. They don't learn from a symbol on a piece of paper. So I decided to give each one of the movement events a sound, and this was before CDs, so they had Walkmans, and they had a tape in the Walkman, and they had my voice making noises in the sequence that they had to do, and they were able to do it instantaneously as opposed to after weeks and weeks of rehearsal. So that was how I first started to do it. And then I started using it for dance purposes. And then eventually I got the idea of doing it with regular people and got a couple of engineers together and wrote the design for the hardware and the software. And we built the system that we are using today.
And I see why you would want to be able to help dancers learn a sequence without a great deal of rehearsal. What's the point of getting regular people to do it?
Well, actually, in the end, it's not a matter of learning, because they can't repeat it. What I was doing with the dancers is it takes so long in rehearsal for the choreographer to even to see what you want to do, especially if you're using unusual vocabulary, movement vocabulary, and you're using sequences that may not necessarily be ones that dancers have learned in the past. So in effect, using the terp idea for that was the way I was doing it. You could use it for training, but they couldn't repeat it. With regular people, for me, it's a matter of people are learning through experience as opposed to accumulated knowledge. So, of course, terp will be used for training people to do ballroom dancing. That's one of the many, many applications, or any kind of dancing, hip-hop, whatever. But the idea that when you're doing it, you're experiencing the movement, like, right now, as opposed to learning it, accumulating the knowledge, and then repeating it.
You've applied for a patent, and most people know you can't patent an idea. What is it that the patent will protect?
It will protect the system and the method. It's a kind of a patent that you can write a system and method. I mean, the software we wrote from scratch. None of the things that we're using are off the shelf. Everything is, you know, we designed and built the boards and soldered them together for the hardware. And both the hardware and the software system need drastic updates.
And so we're looking for some venture capital to help do that.
Absolutely.
And you need the protection of a patent to be able to
do that. Okay.
Correct.
Let's talk about the fun stuff of applications. Now, you just talked about teaching people ballroom dancing through TERP.
Yeah, that is sort of a no-brainer. We're developing games for adults and children. We're beginning the development of that. The last TERP event that you came to, we did a little interactive thing using a MIDI keyboard.
What I saw was, when you're talking about it being interactive, you put two regular people, so to speak, non-professionals, behind the keyboard, and they essentially issued commands to the people on the floor.
This is the beginning of the experimentation towards games. The implications for various kinds of games are, for me, rather obvious in that.
They're not to me. Give us some examples.
Well, if you think about, there's a game called Ad Libs that's very popular now, or Charades. If you think about people trying to tell different stories about conquering each other, or one thing that I would like to do with it is you'd be able to download a little TERP event and you would be able to play it at your six-year-old birthday party, or you would be able to get your friends together and do a little TERP thing, or you could download the dictionary and make up your own. I see this in the future. Either it has its own platform and you buy it for $9.95 at the store, your headsets and the thing on your arm, and then you just go on the internet and you download the stuff and boom, you can play TERP.
I was intrigued by one of the other applications. Having worked briefly as an extra in a film, the idea of that kind of crowd control seems an obvious application.
Yeah, it would make things quite a bit easier, not only for major motion pictures, but also for stadium events when you have those thousands of people turning cards over. You would be able to eliminate rehearsal altogether.
So you wouldn't be controlling the crowds, you'd be controlling the performance.
Yes, exactly, controlling the performance, yeah.
Up next, Patrice Ranier takes TERPing to the dark side.
And there are also applications in the military for military games.
You're listening to Bloomberg Radio. This is Bloomberg News Sunday. I'm Kathleen Campion. We are talking TERPing. TERP creator Patrice Ranier has put together a boilerplate definition of this marriage of art and technology that gives one pause.
TerpSichore, or TERP, is a wireless multi-channeled broadcast system of custom-made hardware and software for composing, directing, and driving human movement without rehearsal.
That's the box that TERP comes in, the definition Ranier has built to entice venture capital for the next stage of TERP's development. The more engaging part of the story is the possibilities, the out-of-the-box applications. Teaching ballroom dancing, games for kids and adults, stadium events like turning those thousands of cards in sync, and there's more.
And there are also applications in the military.
Talk a little bit about that.
If you're trying to move your troops around, I mean, this is something that they do with computers just to play military games and imagine what would happen if X number of troops were moving this way or these people around. War games, exactly. So if you could do that in real time with real people, it's another aspect of crowd control.
So you would actually, instead of gaming it on a computer, you would use a computer to game it in a real terrain, having actual soldiers and machinery move around.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I don't know. It just, right now we're kind of brainstorming about possible applications. And clearly there are a lot of applications in education.
Like what?
What's interesting, when I think about this on the education level, we have done this with 80 and 90-year-old people. And when we did this, there was one woman who really wanted to do it. She could hardly walk, and she was on a walker and really hunched over, and she wanted so badly to do it, and she was moving, you know, very, very slowly. And I said, well, just sit down in the chair, and you'll get one instruction that says walk around the chair, but don't do it. Just stay there, and everything else, you'll be sitting. And she got the instruction, and she was trying so hard to stand up because she wanted to. And I believe that because you're getting the voice in your ear, it very quickly becomes part of you. And because it's your body that is responding, it's a question of really short-circuiting the mind-body connection, which is what TERP does. So I think that when you start talking about education, it's almost impossible to understand at this point in time what those implications could be psychologically or maybe even with people with disabilities. I almost don't even want to say that, but I have this intuition about applications like that. Certainly, I could see it being very interesting for people with psychological problems. because it's very clear to me, being a choreographer, when you move your body in ways that you haven't been doing in your life, you experience emotions. Emotions come up. The concept of body armor that we all know about, the idea that, let's say, if you were abused or if something happened to you in your childhood, you hold your body in certain ways, you have tension in your body in certain ways that you hang on to for your whole life. But I think that when you are terping and you get this voice in your ear and it becomes part of you, you forget about a lot of that and you just move. And so, although we haven't looked into this yet, I think it could be very profound.
Does it concern you at all that there is the potential for kind of a dark side to this? I was watching this with one group of participants controlling, commanding the others. That struck me as a lot fun, but a little dark too.
So much in life is.
So you agree there is that element?
Oh, I think if we don't see the dark and the light side of everything, then we're kidding ourselves. But yes, that's why the military applications I almost don't like to talk about. But at the same time, so many people have mentioned that to me. So
you're in a situation where you've devoted so much of your energy and your own resources to getting TERP to this point. The next step, as you've told us, is the patent. And what's the step after that?
After we find out if it's patentable, who knows, we're supposed to find out in November. I would then be much more aggressive about, for example, taking it into schools. A lot of universities have expressed interest just by accident finding out about it. And I would start writing a business plan and become more aggressive about trying to find venture capital. That might be down the road, but right now I have a nonprofit organization. Everything that we do is for free. It's in that arena, which has been my arena my whole life. So,
is that going to be an issue, taking your not-for-profit mindset into the profit arena?
Yes.
That's Terpsichore's Patrice Renier. Up next, the U.S. Open qualifies as a very hot ticket. Bloomberg's Phil Boroff.
The one everyone's talking about is a Serbian, Djokovic, who has had a lot of big wins this summer.
You're listening to Bloomberg Radio.